we are at the end, the end of round one, but I should really say the beginning of the end of round one, because Eo takes three chapters to end round one. So, he has a lot to say. Remember that Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sophar have really staked out separate ground, even though there's a lot of overlap, in terms of their approaches to him. All three of them want to educate him. All three of them feel like it is their responsibility, whether for the sake of Job or for the sake of the listeners, to set him right on the way God acts. And so Eliphaz said to him, "You say there's no justice, there will be justice, you just have to be patient." And Bildad said to him, "Of course there's justice. That which you think is bad may actually be good. So there's justice right now, not some future date, but right now things are good." And Sophar said, "There is justice, but you don't know what God knows when he decides what is fair. And so what to you seems unfair actually may be most appropriate." And remember, we saw the view that suggested that Sophar is saying that God judges based on potential, rather than based on achievement. The other thing which all three of them said is that he should approach God, right? Whether we take the formula that we saw most recently with Sophar, in which he said that you have to repent and you have to pray, or whether we talk about those who just said turn to God in prayer. Either way. And Job's response has been either, depending on how you understand it, either to say that what I am receiving from God is inappropriate because God is paying ridiculous attention to me, even if I've done something wrong, or alternatively, that which I am receiving is automatic, it's from the stars, and it's inappropriate for the person I am, for the life that I have led. And as far as, you know, talking to me about approaching God, you know, don't talk to me about approaching God. That's not a good idea. You don't want me to approach God, because if I do, I'm not going to say what you think I ought to be saying. So, in responding to Sophar now, which starts in Perek Yud Bet, chapter 12, it's page 1635 in the Stone Tanakh, Job takes up more space than he had used in responding to the others. As Dan Mikra notes, Ralbag as well, this isn't because Sophar needs, bless you, more of a response than the others do. It's because he's actually responding to all three. This is not only about Sophar, although Malbim does view it as a response to Sophar. The general approach is to think that this is actually an answer to the collective group that has visited him. So I gave you on the top of your sheet an overview of the structure of this three-chapter-long speech. First part, he says, "You're not enlightening me. All you're doing is mocking me. Don't think you're educating me about anything. All you're doing is making fun of me." Second, he's going to say that God is indeed the mightiest. He is the most powerful. Of that, I don't disagree. But he's also the source of all destruction. And God does horrible things to me, and he does horrible things to everybody. That's his second part. I hope to get through those two pieces today. After that, he moves on to say, "You think that you are getting divine favor because you're defending God. In fact, you're misrepresenting God, and God doesn't like that. And therefore, you're going to be on his bad list for what you're saying about him. God would prefer my honesty. I will speak truth regarding God." And then he turns to Hashem, and he says, "Here's my case against you," and he lays out his points. They're already familiar to us, but that doesn't stop him from laying them out again. Regarding injustice, regarding the close attention that God is paying to him, which he believes is inappropriate. And then he closes with what sounds like a statement that there is no resurrection of the dead. That Chiyat HaMeitim, the idea in Judaism that after people die, there's still something further, he doesn't believe. Now, important to note, if there really was no such idea in Judaism, he wouldn't need to say that. He's responding to something.
Can I ask you a question?
Well, no, but I'm saying within Tanakh, the decision to include this within... I'm frankly in the camp that says he's not only not Jewish, he's also not real. He's a parable. a dream. This is a parable. It's meant to teach us things. But it's being included in Tanakh to show you somebody saying, I am so miserable, I am so upset, and I don't believe that there's anything else coming. Contrary to the idea at the end of Daniel, hinted at other places in Tanakh, that in fact people do have something further after their existence here. It's explicit going all the way back to Chumash that there is a life after death. What it is a good question.
Was that apostasy?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, heresy, apostasy, yeah, you know, yeah. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Yeah. Kfirah. Okay, so that's the basic structure of this three-chapter-long speech. The themes are Job claiming the mantle of true piety for speaking about God in this way. Job's charges against God will be formulated in a more coherent and solid form than they've been until now. And this new piece, the discussion about what happens after a person dies. Some questions to think about as we go through the section. Number one, obviously, how does Job respond here to the points raised by his visitors until now? How is he interacting with them, or is he just pontificating, which, you know, he has license to do as well? Is there any way that the visitors could have satisfied him and conveyed their message? Is it even possible? Is it advisable? Is that your goal when you're visiting somebody who's suffering? Is the goal, you know, education? But is there any way that they could have enlightened Job without triggering his wrath? Or was that just a given? There's no way, no matter what you say, there's no way he's listening. That's not where he is. Sharon?
They could have been a little more compassionate. They couldn't seem to...
Wouldn't have hurt.
...feeling for him. And they could have said, pray for you. They're supposed to be religious, but they believe in God. You know, well, we don't know exactly.
Right, it is interesting that they keep pushing him to pray, but they make no mention of their own prayers. There's no idea of intercession, even though that's a standard biblical idea, right? Going back to Abraham, going to Moshe, and so on, we have the idea of interceding and praying on behalf of others, and here there's no mention of it. That's certainly true. And yeah, compassion would have been nice, and probably could have at least softened the blow. To the extent that they acknowledge that he's suffering, it's only to the point of saying, and things would be so much better if you just follow our advice. So that's true. Compassion might have been helpful. Is Job correct? This I find to be an interesting question. Is Job correct that it's more pious to describe God based on our experiences and perceptions than based on what we aspire for God to be? Right? They're describing God based on what they hope God will be. Based on what they think, you know, you're supposed to believe. Is that better? Is what they're doing better than what Job does, where he says, well, listen, I believe in God, but this is what I believe God does, and I'm going to call it like it is. I think that's a very... I think that's... You know, it's an interesting question to me. What exactly are we meant to put forth? Is it what we're taught or what we experience? So those are just some questions to think about as we go through this. But we begin with the opening of chapter 12. Again, it's page 1635 in the stone. Yeah?
And you're saying this is a response to the collective, not just...
Right. I tend to go with the approach of Dan Mikra, of Ralbag, that this is an answer to all three, rather than the Malbim approach that it's just an answer to it so far. We will see elements of it that are responses to it so far. But I tend to think it is to all three. So his introduction, he says, you're not enlightening me, you're only mocking me. Opening few sentences here. Vayan, Iyov, Vayomar. Right? The traditional format. Iyov declared and said, Omnam ki atem am ve'imachem tamut chokhma. I don't know what to do with all the mems in this sentence. There's got to be something here beyond just the poetic sound. Omnam, the consonants. Omnam ki atem am ve'imachem tamut chokhma. It sounds like he's talking to somebody who has an problem. He's making fun of him or something. I don't know. I don't know what this is. But he says, it's true You are the many. You are the masses. And I'm going to come back to what he means by that. V'imachem tamut chochma, which in its simplest explanation is a sarcastic statement, and with you wit will perish. With you wit will die. You get the last word. After you, no one has any brilliance. Gam li levav kemochem, I have news for you. I have a heart like you do. Lo nofel anochi mikem, I am no less than you. No fail to fall. I'm no lower than you. Vezmi ein kamoela. And who doesn't know things like what you're saying? Right? This is a direct response. He is talking to them as harshly as he speaks to God. Yes?
Sorry, what does the word omnam mean?
Right, so omnam is in truth. Sometimes it's however, but it's still in the sense of in truth, despite what was said before, in truth, such and such. What does the art scroll do with it? Truly, yeah. Same idea.
I was just wondering if it was in response to a rote marine that he, I thought maybe on them means like the end or like not the many, but the, like we're done. Like
oh, now I
but
yeah.
Not
right. Okay. The statement to them is either you represent the view of the Am, which in and of itself could be an insult. The Da'at Mikra renders it that way. The Am suggests the ignorant masses. You know, I'm enlightened. You, the view you're saying, Atem Am, you're of the ignorant masses. Or, alternatively, you represent the view of the general population, not as an insult, but just as a statement. Zudat David takes that approach. Ve'imachem tamut chokma, and wit dies with you. No one has it but you. And that's the sarcastic take. Another approach, Mitzudat David, is to put it as a question. You think because you're many, right, you are the plural, right? Therefore, you have a monopoly on wit. That's another take. Ibn Ezra has another approach, which I brought on the sheet in source number one. I had to pick one and put it on the sheet. He says, Imachem ba'avur kisilutchem ki'inyan nisrecha chochmatam. He says, Imachem, with you, meaning because of you, tamut chachma, because of you, wisdom will die. In other words, the things that you're saying are killing my brain. That's what he's. That's what he's saying. He's saying he quotes the phrase nisrecha chachmatam. Their wisdom has decayed. So what he's saying is. Yeah, you're the death of wisdom right there. Gamlil, either way, he is sharp. And, you know, he has reason.
Well, they were sharp with him, were they? They said, just because you're eloquent?
Yeah, that's true. They haven't, but they pull punches more than he has. Right.
Punches.
Right. Round two, they will get more personal. And maybe as a response to what he's done here. He says, Gam li levav kemochem, I have a heart like you do, you know. I know everything that you say. What you're saying isn't news. And so he says, in Psukim Dalet Tavav, sentences 4 to 6, he says, you're mocking me. All of you righteous people are mocking me. Now this passage here, sentences 4 to 6, are very hard to translate. There are multiple ways to read them, so I'm going to do my best to try to present something coherent here while giving you a sense of the breadth of what you can do with it. Schok l're'ehu ehyeh. I will be a source of laughter for re'ehu, literally for his friend. Meaning, people get to laugh about me with each other. Kore le'loka v'ya'ne'ehu. The person who calls out to God and God answers him. Schok tzadik tamim, I am a source of laughter for the tzadik tamim, for the people who are righteous and complete. All you high and mighty people who are so close to God, who say, call out to God and God will answer. You're laughing at me. You're mocking me. That's the way Mitzudat David reads it. If you take a look at source number 2, Rabbi David Altshuler, writing in the 19th century, he says, Hine, Ani ehyeh l'schok ulela'ag l'machshavaso or l'machshavto. I am a source of laughter and mockery, or a target of it, for his thoughts. Asher ba'avur godel hatzlachaso, because of his great success, his, the righteous person, asher yasig kol ta'avaso, who achieves all that he desires, ki'ilu b'chol asher yikralish ol me'aloka, ye'aneh, as though whatever he asks of God, God answers. He is responded to. V'yashivu l'malot she'ilato, and God fills his request. Lazega valibo. Therefore, he has become arrogant. Ad ki yischok alai, to the point of laughing at me, asher ani be'emet tzadik tamim. I am the one who actually is tzadik tamim. Right? Go back to the beginning of the book. I am the one who the Torah calls tzadik tamim, who Tanakh calls tzadik tamim. We're coming back to that. Don't forget that point. It's very good. But he's also tzaddik tamim. Ish haya beretzut yog shemo, right? Followed by the statement. Let's go back to the beginning of the book again. V'haya ha'isho tam v'yashar. He was tam, he was complete. He was yashar, he was straight. He is yirei Elohim, God-fearing. V'sar meira. And he stayed away from evil. And God described him in Pasuk Chet, sentence 8, as Ish Tam V'Yashar Yirei Elohim and Sar Meira. Did we actually call him Tzaddik? I thought I remembered that we did. No, we did not call him Tzaddik. What did I think you did? Well, no, I'm going to come back to. But you're right, I don't see Tzaddik. Okay. He was Tamim, though. Tamim he has. He is known as the Tam, but you're right, he's not Tzaddik.
What's the difference?
So, he said, well, the difference between what? Well, Tzaddik is a particular term connoting righteous in the sense of justice. Tamim suggests that you are complete in your actions. But specifically for someone who complains so much about the injustice in the universe, it would have carried weight had he been called Tzaddik. He is the arbiter of justice. Yeah. But his statement here, either way, I take as Mitzudat David does, he says, I am a source of laughter for the one who has access to God, for these people who are righteous. I am righteous. And then he says in Pasuk Hey, in sentence 5, Lapid buz la'ashtut sha'anan nachon le'moad de'ragel. This is the hardest sentence in all of them. This is the hardest one in our section here. Lapid is not a politician's last name. Someone who's jealous he didn't give that speech today. The lapid is a torch. It's something you use to light a fire. That's what a lapid is. Buz is scorn. Bizayon, mockery, being disgraced. So one way to take this sentence is that it's a development of what he said in his previous sentence when he said, people mock me. So he continues to say, Lapid buz, I am a torch of scorn, meaning I'm burning with scorn. Lashtut sha'anan, for the people who are ashtut sha'anan. Sha'anan means to be at peace, to be calm. Ashtut is translated in two different ways, as I've seen it. Either it represents strength, so people who are strong and at peace. The other, like an eshet, and mayav eshet shein is a piece of ivory. The other one, good. Well, that's they're getting from sha'anan. But the other approach is ashatot can be thoughts. So they are complacent or they're at peace in their thoughts. But either way, whether these are people who are strong like stone and at peace, or their thoughts are complacent and peaceful, either way, they are the opposite of me. Right? I am rogues. I am in turmoil. And I am a source of scorn for those people who do not have my turmoil. You follow? That's all one way to take the sentence. If you take a look on the sheet, I actually charted, I forgot I had done that. I charted for you three different ways to read the sentence. The first one is what I just said, and it's Dat Mikra's approach. I am a target of scorn for those who rest peacefully. I am set I'm sorry, I didn't read the end of the sentence yet. Nachon le'moa de'ragel. Moa de'ragel means those who stumble, those whose feet slip. So I am set to stumble. The difficulty in reading this is that the grammar doesn't really carry so well. Moadei Ragel suggests plural. There are those who stumble. But it says, I am prepared for those who stumble. It doesn't really read properly. It doesn't scan right. But that's one read of the sentence. Rashi's read of the sentence is that Lapid Buz is not a description of himself. Rather, it's a wish for what should happen to those people who are mocking him. There should be a torch of scorn, as Rashi says, the fire of Gehinnom, the place of punishment. There should be a torch of scorn for these people who are strong and arrogant, or arrogant in their in their peace that they have in their hearts. Nahon l'moad de ragel, they are set to stumble. The torch of scorn is set for those who are going to stumble. These people who are mocking me and shaming me are destined for the torch of scorn. Hold on one second, just to go through the third one, and then I'll take the comments. And then Ezra says a different take altogether. He says, lapid should not be read as a torch. La can be a prefix in Hebrew, right? When la is a prefix, it means
two.
Pid, peyudalid, is a tragedy, an ason, exactly, catastrophe. So la, pid, buz, lashtut, sha'anan. I have experienced pid. I have experienced ason. I have experienced tragedy. I am a tragic figure, causing buz, causing scorn for those who rest peacefully. They mock me. And therefore I stumble. Whichever way you read this sentence, the message is that he's angry at these people who are making fun of them, and he is jealous of the peace that they have. And he says, that's what drives them to mock me. I, who am suffering and am in turmoil, they get to make fun of me because everything is good for them. They don't have to worry about a thing. And so either they should burn as a result, or I am burning as a result. Rita.
I said the first of this, he said, they are righteous and they are making fun of me, but I'm the righteous one. Is that what he was saying?
He's saying these people hold themselves to be righteous. They say that God answers them when they call him. Does he really believe that God answers them? I'm not so sure.
But he says that he himself is.
Right, that's why Mitzvot David, Rashi and others read it. He's saying, I am Tzadik Tamim. By what right do they say this?
He refers to himself as Tzadik.
Yes.
Okay, but do we see him as Tzadik? This is what my confusion is.
Oh, we have 30 more chapters to be confused. Oh,
okay, because in the beginning we said he was Tzadik. Now we said at the beginning it says he wasn't Tzadik.
Well, it didn't use the word Tzadik. It used plenty of very nice words.
Okay. But
Tam Yashar Yirei Elokim Sarmei Ra are not things that everybody gets as descriptions.
Okay, but he refers to himself.
Yeah, well, if I read it that way, if I take the view of Mitzvot David, if I take the view of Rashi, he is referring to himself. You could legitimately read the sentence without that and say, he is saying, I am a source of mockery for those who claim they are Tzadik Tamim.
And who's he talking about? He's talking about these friends?
Yes. Yeah, former friends. Yeah, so with a hand over here. No? Okay, so what he is saying here is either they're causing me scorn, or they're causing me to burn, or they should burn. I'm just looking here. I brought you in source number 4. I brought you a Rashi. I'm just trying to figure out why. Oh, I see. It's on the next sentence. Okay. Pasuk Vav, he concludes this thought, this little sub-thought here, regarding the scorn that they're heaping upon him. He says something very loaded, perhaps the most important sentence in this section. Yishlayu ohalim l'shodidim, uvatuchot l'margize el, l'asher hevi eloah biyado. He says, the tents are yishlayu. Yishlayu. What does it mean in Hebrew to be shalev, shin lamed vav?
Yeah, shalev.
Peaceful, right. To be at peace, to be at rest. Yishlayu o'alim, the tents are at rest, l'shodidim, for the thieves, for the bandits, for the people who take spoils. they're doing just fine. Uvatuchot, from Bitachon, they are secure. Lemargize Kael, for those who anger God. Lasher Evi Elo Ka Biado, that last four words are challenging to translate. There are two different approaches, but let's get the first half of the sentence first. Two different approaches. One approach is, when you spoke to me, this is Da'at Mikra's approach, when you spoke to me in previous chapters, you told me, if I just turn to God, if I just pray, then I will have peace in my tent, right? V'yadataki shalom o'halecha. You will know that your tent is at peace. I think that was Eliphaz, right? You'll have peace. You speak of peaceful tents. You want to know who has a peaceful tent? The thieves have peaceful tents, right? They're doing just fine. Are they the people God likes? The people who have stolen. You speak of security. Security is for the wicked. The wicked are the ones who are doing fine. Not the people who are good. That's one take. That's not Mikra's take. Mitzudat David takes it as more pointed. He says he's talking about the friends again. And he's saying, the fact that you're at peace doesn't mean you're a good person. Thieves are also at peace, you know. There's no justice. The people who are horrible people, they get peace. And therefore, the fact that you're doing okay doesn't really mean a whole lot in terms of giving me confidence that you have the secret to a good life. And then his last four words in the sentence, Masher Evi Elo Ka Biado. I'm curious how your book's translated. What do we have? Sorry? Into whoever's hand God brings it. Okay, so that translation is taking the approach of Rashi. If you take a look at your sheets, it's source number 5. I'm sorry, number 4. L'chol asher hevilo hatsur hashalom biyado. To those for whom God has provided peace. Im tov im ra. Whether they're good or bad doesn't matter. What he's saying is, there's a lot of peace for the people who God chooses to give peace to. Whether they're good or bad is irrelevant. That's one take. Ralbag has a different take. Is that how all of yours translate it? Debbie, what do you have in JPS?
I've read it 8 times. I don't understand it.
Excellent. That's how I felt when I was reading the Hebrew.
Those whom God's hands have produced. What do they produce?
Well, they're reading it as Asher Hevi Eloka Biado, the one who God has produced with his hands.
And are secure.
Right. Because that's the beginning of this.
Except for me.
Well, that's the idea.
That's right.
Everybody but me gets peace. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, Rabag, I mean, that's closer to Rashi, frankly. The Ralbag says no. The person who brings his idols in his hand, the person who holds his gods in his hands.
Small g.
Correct. If you take a look at source number 5, Lo'obdei kochavim u'mazalot, the worshippers of literally stars and constellations, but he means worshippers of idols. Sheyaviu kochavim u'mazalot bidehem v'yishtachavu lahem. They bring their gods in their hands and they bow down to them. That's Ralbag's read. In other words, what he's saying is that there is peace aplenty for sinners. You can't draw any conclusions from the fact that I am not at peace, and you can't draw any conclusions from the fact that you are at peace. These people get to mock me. These so-called righteous people get to mock me, and the wicked people are the ones who are at peace. Worth noting, and here I come back to Sharon's point, because Sharon remembers what we did in our Medrash Shir last year, that the Medrash does indeed connect this to Noah. If you take a look at source number 6, the Medrash here is seizing indeed upon Tzadik Tamim as the link, although the Midrashim link it to the rest of the verse as well. Take a look at source number 6. Kol makom shenemar ish tzadik u'mumche. Every time that the Torah says, actually it's funny, this side of the table was here for this last year, Henrina, and that side of the table was not, so I should just turn this way. I'll turn to this half of the camera. Every time it says ish, it refers to someone who is tzaddik, righteous, and mumcheh, which we suggested in learning this medrash means tested, certified by via experience. What makes Noach Ish, right? Noach Ish Tzadik? Because for 120 years that God has given until the flood, he plants cedar trees and then he cuts them down. Why he's planting cedar when it says Atzei Gopher is its own discussion what exactly gopher wood is. But he's planting these cedar trees and he's cutting them down. Amru lama kedain, and they said to him, what is this? What in the world are you doing? It's if you're bothered by the Aramaic, it's Yerushalmi Aramaic, because this is Bereshit Rabbah, and it's Israeli in origin. Amru lama kedain, they said, what is this? Amar Lahon, to which he replied, Kach Amar Mare Dalma, so the master of the world has said, Du Maisi Mabula Al Alma, that he's bringing a flood upon the world. Amrle, they said to him, Enaisi Mabula, Loasiel Al Bese Deu Gavra, they said, we have news for you. If there's a flood coming, the flood is coming on your house, not on our houses. Nothing's happening to us. They mock him, in other words. Kevin Shemesim Mesushelach, and in fact when Mesushelach, Noach's grandfather, died right before the flood, when you do the years of the Begats, you see he dies the year of the flood. The Medrash expands on that, that the flood comes after his Shiva. But when Mesushelach died, Amrulei, they said to him, Halo Asi Mabula, Ela Besi Dehu Gavra. They said, see, the flood is coming upon your house, Noach. Look what's happened to you. Mesushelach has died. And then here we get the pasuk that Eov says, a source of scorn, lapid buz, the torch of scorn, lashtut shanan nachon lemoadei regel. As I translated it then, a torch of scorn for the thoughts of those who are at ease, prepared for those whose feet slip. So however you want to translate that, you know, we've now given three different approaches. But Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana comments on it and says, Kruz echad amad li b'dor amabu. One person who was a herald, Noach, stood for me in the generation of the flood, said Noach, Taman Amrin, Kruzle Lapidle. Where does he get it from? Because there, and when Midrash Rabbah says there, it will generally mean Babylon, they had a statement they used to call, they herald a Lapid, a torch. That's number one. Buz, scorn, Shaymavazim Alav, because they mocked him. Vakarule Bizaya Saba. They called him the disgraced old man. Lashtut Sha'anan, Shayukashim Ka'ashatot. These people who are tough like pieces of iron ore. And then finally, Nachon Lemoed De Regel, Shayimuchanim Lishne Shivarim, Leshever Milamalo, Leshever Milamata. They are the ones who are going to slip. They will be broken from below, broken from above. So the Medrash indeed links it to Noah because of this phrase Tzadik Tamim, and the Talmud in source number 7 expands upon the connections by explaining the Ashtut Sha'anan as the material they plan on using to prevent water from flooding them from below. Right? I'm not going to read out the entire thing. You can see it here on your sheet. But they tell him, "Don't worry, we're protected. We have the ashtut. We have this tough material, and that is what's going to protect us." So that's just a note from the Medrash expanding on this idea. Yeah. Good, you got both choices right there. Either they are either he's saying yes, they're tzaddikim clearly because God answers them, or he's mocking them and he's saying the so-called tzaddikim, the people who declare themselves to be righteous, they're holding themselves up as an example, you know, of piety and righteousness. Yeah.
They themselves are presenting themselves like tzaddikim.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my confusion.
Oh, okay. Great. So he says to them, first he said, you're not enlightening me, you are the death of wisdom, whether because what you're saying is killing wisdom, or, you know, sarcastically, you think, you know, wisdom resides only with you. You're mocking me, even as, you know, what you say, when you say that security would come to me if I did what you do, you know that thieves are secure also. And that brings him back to the point of, you are not enlightening me. Pasuk Zion, sentence 7. Ve'ulam, but, he says, Sha'alna v'hemos v'sareka. Go ask the animals. They'll teach you. Terecha, Tereh, like Torah. They will guide you. Va'ol HaShamayim, ask the birds in the heavens, V'yaged lach, the bird will tell you. O Siach La'aretz, V'sorecha, or tell the earth, the plant kingdom, the land. They'll teach you. V'sapru lacha degei hayam, the fish can tell you. Mi lo yada b'chol eile. Like Shakespearean. The Milo Yadabichol Eile. Who doesn't know everything you've already told me? Kiyad Hashem Astazos, that this is in fact from the hand of God. I know it already. The birds know it. The animals know it. The land knows it. The fish know it. What do you think you're telling me? Something that I didn't know? Nonsense. There's also, as Dad Mikra reads it, a response here to Tzofar, who remember was responding to Job, right? Job had initially talked about how he's being attacked from above and below and all that, and so far his response was to say, you know, God's wisdom is above and below in all dimensions. So here he says, yeah, turn to the animals and the birds. All of them know exactly what you've said. You talk about it being divine wisdom in all the dimensions. The truth is, the beasts know it too. It's not some great secret. What you're telling me is not hidden wisdom so far, which I'm going to come back to in a little bit. I'll say it now. I put it later, but I'm going to say it now. If you take a look at source number 9, Ralbag says it. V'ratzabazeh. What Job was saying here, what he meant to say was, he says, from the senses themselves, you know what? No, I realize now why I put it at the end. Hold off on it, sorry. It does require the next few sentences. It's not the... What we've seen is a piece of it, but not the whole thing. Sorry, apologize. But he says, you are not enlightening me, and then he concludes with sentences 10 to 13. And he refers to his own senses. He says, "Halo ozen milin tivchan." The ear comprehends words. V'cheich ochel yitam lo, and the palate can taste food. And taste implies not simply, you know, tasting food, but comprehension. To understand, is this good for me? Is this bad for me? Is this sweet? Is this sour? Like we use the word for logic and reason. What's the word that we use in Hebrew? Tam. Tam is the word for reason and for logic. It's the same word as for taste, right? There's a reason for that. I mean, it's the idea is that taste reflects an element of discernment. Bishishim chochma v'orech yamim tivuna. He says in sentence 12. He says, in the elderly lies wisdom. In those who have lived long lives is found understanding. Imo chachma ugvura. With such a person rests wisdom and strength. I'm translating this one way. There's another way you could translate it momentarily. Lo etza utvuna. This person has counsel and understanding. That's Mitzudat David's approach. If you take a look at source number 8, he says, Ha'ozen hashomat. The ear that hears. Tivchan hadvarim mimi ne'emru. The ear that hears will distinguish, will examine the words from whom they have been said. And the palate that tastes will taste the food to see, is it bitter, is it sweet? Because that's what has this ability, that's what possesses the sensitivity. And so our senses can comprehend much of what has been said. You might say, or not much has been said, but much of what exists they can comprehend. You might say, and therefore, much wisdom will be found in the heart of those who have aged, those who have experienced a lot. Because as a result of their great number of years, they've seen a lot. They've experienced a lot. And therefore, they have wisdom. And that's the statement that he's making. He says, it's all about the senses. And that's why I know that God controls all of this. That's why I know it, because I've sensed it. My senses know more than this wisdom that you claim is hidden. You follow? That's what he says to cap his section. Worth noting a couple of things here. First of all, notice the phrase that he used describing God as God's power in sentence 10. Asher biado nefesh kol chai, in his hand is the life of all living. Right? All souls are found in God's hand. As opposed to in Tehillim in Psalms, in which we say, Biadcha avkid ruchi, I put my soul in God's hands. It's a decision I make to trust God. He's saying it's reality. My soul is in God's hands, as opposed to being willing about it. I also wonder whether when he says, Asher biado nefesh kol chai, in God's hand is the life of all that lives. Flip back to chapter 2, sentence 6, please. I wonder if this is conscious or if I'm reading too much in there. Chapter 2, sentence 6, please. Right? What did he say? He says to the Satan, you can do what you want to Job, only guard his nephesh. Right? Guard his nephesh. And here, Job says, in God's hand is nephesh kol chai. Right? I wonder if there's any sort of reference going on between the two sections. I can't really put my finger on like what it means.
Well, isn't the nephesh the lowest part of the soul, like part of the
So,
like in other words, don't kill him.
Right. Among the mystics, that's the way we take the nephesh, is that it's the animal part of the soul, so to speak. Yes. So, he says, well, I'll let Rabban say it, because he's going to say it better than I can. Take a look now at source number 9, now that we've seen him talk about his senses. He says, Ratzav azeh, Job means to say, Kime'achush nikach hathala v'shoresh amash nechkar bo. From the senses, you can draw a beginning and a root for whatever we're going to examine. That's where your intelligence begins. And that's why wisdom is found in the aged. Long life is the cause for comprehension, for understanding. Because over long periods of time, a person's senses will clarify many things and guide him to truth. V'zeh amar k'neged sofar. He says this to Sofar specifically. Shayat se'ir mimenu liyamim. Because Sofar, remember I repeated a few times in the course of the year, Sofar is the youngest of the three. So I keep saying that it's because of a few things. Number one, he speaks last. Number two, he's the only one who doesn't refer to received wisdom from the that he's heard from others. The way he speaks, the style of his speech, in terms of the sophistication or lack thereof, and what he draws on, it's all pointing to that. Plus, when we get to Elihu, who's the fourth one to chime in, he says, I waited till the end because I am younger than all of you, suggesting that there is this kind of pecking order to the way they go. So far, I won't even speak in the third round. So Ralbag sees that and says, this is actually a direct response to Tzofar, saying, you know, people who are older than you, who have seen more of life than you, have wisdom too. You know, we've seen enough that we have wisdom to impart, whippersnapper. That's the approach that he's taking. Or Ralbag says it could be used to build that also. It could be it's opposite two of them. It's not just opposite Sofar. It could be it's opposite Sofar and Bildad. What you're going to see, again, when you get to Perek Ted Vav, then chapter 15, in sentence 10, Eliphaz, when he responds to Yov, is going to say, Gam sav gam yasis banu, I have news for you, there is the elderly among us too, which he means himself. Right? He says, you know, I'm old also, and kabir me'avicha yamim, and I'm older than your father. So, don't pull rank here on me. But yeah, that's Ralbag. That's absolutely brilliant. Okay, so what we've seen in this opening part of chapter 12, the opening 13 psukim, the opening 13 sentences, is a brushback, essentially, to the collective three of them, saying, you talk of hidden wisdom, and you talk about, you know, things, you know, peace, and so, he says, you're not impressing me. Anybody could say what you're saying. It's obvious, it's out there in the world, ask the animals, they'll say it too. There's no hidden wisdom involved. And as far as the peace you promise, I see thieves who are doing just fine also. So don't tell me that by being good, I'm going to earn peace. And then he moves into a discussion of God as the mightiest, but along the way as the source of all destruction. Take a look, we'll start it, we're not going to finish it. But take a look at Pasuk Yud Dalet, sentence 14. He says, Hein Yaharos Velo Yibaneh, God will destroy, and it will not be built up. Yisgor Al Ish Velo Yipaseach, he will close a person in, and it will never be opened. He'll never be released. That's a term we've used before, by the way. Sigira we used before for the quarantining of Job. We made reference to that. But what Job is going to do here is he's going to speak of the destruction that God brings with his power. And actually, let me preface it a little bit. Because Job is going to speak to each of those who have addressed him here. To Eliphaz, who says there is hope, he will reply, no, God's destruction is permanent. To Bildad, who says that God's destruction is constructive, that it leads to a good place, like the tree being transplanted. No, God destroys entirely. There is no regrowth that occurs after. And as far as Zophar, who says that the destruction is deserved, no, God destroys the best of people, as you're going to see here. He says it's not true that it's deserved. Now that leads to a question, because for the last several chapters I've been emphasizing that there are two schools in terms of how to read Job's allegations. One school of thought says that Job believes that God is actually doing bad things, and that school is fine with this. But the other school of thought, which we've seen put forth by Ralbag, by Mitzudat David, I think by Malum also, but I'm not sure, has said that he's arguing that God has outsourced the running of the universe to the constellations, and it's all automatic, and everything that was going to happen to him was destined from the day he was born. And if I take that view, then how is it that he's now going to say God is evil? Look at all the destruction he brings. God didn't do it. So what would you answer? How can you blame God if you just said that God didn't cause this?
God still created the stars and all that in so that it would still the creative force behind the stars.
Right. So that's one answer. And the other answer? All right, let's take a look first at that answer. Take a look at source number 11. That's what Ralbag says. Kol elu ha'inyanim, all of these things, the devastation that we're going to see, yiches Iyov el Hashem yisbarach, Job ascribed to God, b'ishtal shalut ha'sibot, through the hierarchy of causes that God has set into motion, rotzalom ha'shem yisudarim lefidato, me'agarmim ha'shmiyim, that in Job's mind, in his view, they're all arranged by the constellations, by the celestial causes. V'yuchasu al Hashem yisbarach, but they are associated with God, they're attributed to God. Mipnei hayosu ha'sibah ha'rishona l'chol ma she'yimaseh, because he's ultimately the one who set it in motion. He is still the first cause. And as the first cause, I don't care how many steps removed you think there are now between God and whatever the end result is, if he puts the constellations in charge, then he is responsible. There's no such thing as claiming the distance. That's Ralbag's approach. Mitzudat David gives what I think is, an equally strong answer in source number 10. He says, if God wants to take charge and stop bad things from happening, it's not hard. Right? He could intervene at any time. And therefore he's responsible by neglect. That's the way that the Mitzudat David answers. So what we're going to say here, that God is responsible for the evil that happens, may be direct and may be indirect. But either way, Job is holding God responsible. You follow? Okay, so now let's see what he says. He describes God, first we said in sentence 14, as destroying something such that it will not be rebuilt, as imprisoning a person, and nobody will escape. Not only does he destroy, but it is permanent. And that he's going to come back to at the end when he talks about his belief that nothing happens after death. He says in Pasuk Tetvav, sentence 15, Hei niatsor b'mayim v'yivashu. He closes up the water and it dries out. He causes drought. The stream runs dry. V'shalchem v'yavchu aretz. He sends the water forth and it overturns the land. God brings devastation whether by drought or by flood. Imo oz v'tushia. Oh yes, like you said so far. With God is wisdom and counsel. Absolutely, like you said so far. I agree with you 100%. Lo shogeg umashkeh, but I have news for you. Along with that comes the error and the cause of error. That is also in God's hands. I just realized that the art school has flipped the page. They're now on page 1637. Apologize. But the error and the cause of error, those are God's responsibility. And that's what he moves into now, in terms of God's responsibility for bringing the mighty low. He says, actually, I'm torn between seeing Ralbach first, or not seeing Ralbach first. Let's see Ralbach first. Take a look at source number 12. He says, "Umiktzat elu advarim shezachariyov, yiktzat raya, al she'elu ha'enyanim mukbalim umusudarim bitzad ha'marechet." He says, from some of these things that Job is going to mention here in this section, we see evidence that which happens in this world is actually bounded and arranged, as he puts it, by the constellations, meaning that the events of this world are not natural, cause and effect. There is a force that is making things happen. Why? Because what he's going to describe in this section are reversals. The mighty being laid low. And he says, Shim lo haya hinyan kein, if it were not so, that it's all being guided. Will be shocking. Why is it that wise people suddenly do foolish things? Why is it that a good ruler will lose his ability to govern well? You see some kings or some presidents or some whatever they are who had been doing just fine and then suddenly they make some kind of foolish mistake. And the warrior suddenly doesn't seem to fight like a warrior. He loses his military prowess. So what Ralbach says is the point of the reversals that we're going to see in this section is not only to describe God as being mighty, in that he can lay low the great, but also that when he acts, it's so clear that it's being orchestrated by the fact that what happens is so counterintuitive. That's his statement. And now we'll see what he says. He says in sentence 17, Molich Yoatzim Sholal. He takes the counselors and he guides them into foolishness. Vishov, he makes them wander. Vishov Tim Yaholel. He makes the judges, who we assume are wise, foolish. Musar Malachim Piteach. He opens up the cords of the kings so that those they had imprisoned are now freed. Vayesor Ezor B'masnehem. But he puts a belt around them. He turns the kings into prisoners. There are multiple ways to translate these. I'm taking one route just because otherwise it'll be too complex. Molich Kohanim Sholal. He takes the Kohanim. A Kohen is not only a priest. The Kohanim were also advisors. A term seen before our Kohanim, before our priests in the Torah. The idea of a Kohen was somebody of counsel. So, Molich Kohanim Sholal, he makes them foolish. Ve'esanim Yisalef, and he corrupts the path of those who had been steadfast. Meisir Safa L'ne'emanim V'tam Zekenim Yikach. He removes the speech of those who had been faithful, meaning those who had been so strong in their speech, who had given good advice. V'tam Zekenim Yikach. He takes away the wisdom of the elderly. Shofech Buz Al Nedivim. He pours scorn upon princes. Umeziach Afikim Ripa. And the belt of Afikim, this is a hard one to translate. Afikim is taken either to refer to princes, or it could be dams, like a dam of a stream. But he loosens that which had been their belt that was girding them. The Umeziach Afikim Ripa, that he loosens. Megaleh Mukot Mini Choshech, he reveals the depths from within the darkness. Vayotzei La'oretz HaMavet, he brings the shadow of death to light. Masgila Goyim Vayabdim, he makes the nations great and then he destroys them. Shoteach La'goyim Vayanchem, he either makes the land smooth for nations and then guides them, or alternatively, he lays out a trap for nations and then he guides them into the trap. Meisir lev rashei am haaretz, he removes the heart of the leaders of the nations. Vayaseim besohu lo darech, and he guides them into emptiness where there is no path. Yimashishu choshech velo or, they will feel their way in darkness without light. Vayaseim kashikor, and he guides them as though they were drunk. God turns everything on its head. He lays the mighty low. So far, Eliphaz, Bildad, I can praise God for better than you. Okay? Here's what I can provide for you, this great description of divine might, but all in the context of destruction. All in terms of what God takes apart, not in terms of building. And that's what Job sees, is destruction. Now, there's more to say on this section as well as where he's going. But I'm going to stop with that, I think for now. We've covered the opening chapter of his three-chapter speech.
Did this remind you at all of in the book of Daniel, the king's fate?
In the sense that he's laid low? Absolutely. I mean, that image is very much seen here. Yeah, it's a good point. They don't mention him turning into a beast here, but other than that, yes, you're right. What happens in Nebuchadnezzar? Yeah, absolutely true. Good. Thank you very much.